University. Quality, leadership, and innovation are valued here.
Welcome to Midday. I'm Mike Mulcahy, sitting in today for Gary Eichten. Let's start today with a pop quiz. Quick, name Minnesota's major political parties. You probably got the Republicans and the DFL, no problem there. Of course, there's also Governor Ventura's Independence Party. But did you know there's another major party in Minnesota? It's called the Constitution Party, and its candidates for the U.S. Senate will be on the ballot this November along with the others. The party will also have a Senate primary in September because two people have filed for office to run as the Constitution Party candidate for Senate. They're both with us today as part of our Meet the Candidates series. David Swan is the Constitution Party's endorsed candidate. He is a computer consultant from Brooklyn Park. This is his first run for public office. Mr. Swan is also the Minnesota coordinator for the Separation of School and State Alliance. And thanks for being with us on Midday.
Thank you, Mike.
The other candidate for the Constitution Party's U.S. Senate nomination is Derek Schramm. He is a software engineer at Unisys and St. Paul Tech. Mr. Schramm was a 1998 candidate for Congress in the 3rd District, the district where Jim Ramstead is the incumbent Republican. We invite you to join our conversation. The number to call in the Twin Cities to find out more about the Constitution Party or to talk with the two candidates running for the U.S. Senate as Constitution Party candidates, the number in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. Anywhere else you can hear us, it's a toll-free call, 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. David Swan, I'm going to start with you. Tell us a little bit about the Constitution Party and how it came to be a major party here in Minnesota.
Well, the Constitution Party, many people may know it as the U.S. Taxpayers Party. It was recently renamed to the Constitution Party. Last general election, we received 6% of the vote for a statewide office, and that enabled us to attain major party status in Minnesota.
And that was the state auditor candidate.
That's correct, yeah.
Well, what are three or four of the major tenets of the party, the philosophical beliefs of the party?
If you can imagine George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, George Mason being alive today, they would be members of the Constitution Party. The name Constitution Party signifies the core set of beliefs that we hold, that basically the Constitution is the law of the land. It was created the way it was created to limit the powers of the federal government and to protect the liberty of the citizens. That includes the statements in the Declaration of Independence that refer to our unalienable rights that come from the Creator, things like the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, among others. So our basic tenet is keep the recognition that God is sovereign over the affairs of men, and that our Constitution is a morally based Constitution, limiting the powers of the federal government so that individuals can enjoy their own personal liberty.
Okay. Well, Derek Schramm, we'll talk to you about some of these fundamental tenets of the party, but why did you decide to run in the primary against Mr. Swan? Whoops. Let me just turn your mic on there. There you go.
Am I here now? Okay. I decided to run in the primary because I wanted to make some points of some issues that I think that conservatives and religious conservatives have to basically speak out against. One is such things as pornography. Pornography is not speech, and our rights don't depend upon the freedom of pornography. A lot of people don't want to take that on, and I feel that maybe my prophetic role or just my role in politics is to make an issue of that, and I made a big issue of that in 1998. I want to point out that next month, the Democrats are going to basically holding a fundraiser at the Playboy Mansion. We have had Phyllis Kahn introduce legislation that would legalize prostitution, sex with animals, and sodomy. I think that this is a wrong direction for America. I think it's a wrong direction for the state as well. So I want to make big points of those issues. I also want to address the issue of campaign finance. There's the government subsidy for candidates, and our party will not accept those. Pat Buchanan has decided to accept the presidential campaign funds. Candidate Gore has done the same. George Bush has decided not to because he can raise more money without doing that. Mm-hmm. Our candidates will never accept government subsidies for our campaigns.
No public campaign funds.
No public campaign funds. We're opposed to them. We want to basically vote them out because we feel that it's a tyranny to subsidize the speech of other people. That's something that Thomas Jefferson once said, to compel people to pay for beliefs that they abhor is sinful and tyrannical. So basically the Democrats receiving, or the Republicans receiving, or even the Reform Party, Independent Party, whoever, when they receive election funds or political campaign refunds, that this is tyrannizing the people for speech.
That's Derek Schramm. He's one of the candidates seeking the Constitution Party nomination for U.S. Senate. The other candidate is David Swan. They are both with us today in the studio. David Swan, tell us a little about your campaign. Why are you running for U.S. Senate?
It was when I listened to Gary Eichten interviewing Rod Grams that I basically made my final decision to run. We would be painted by the media as a conservative party. Some friends who know Rod Grams said, why would you run against Rod? He's a conservative. And I had to think about that for a long time. I looked up his voting record and found that while he's here in Minnesota, he speaks a conservative language, but when he votes in Washington, he votes to support the same liberal causes that the Democrats support, although he does have some good votes. But when I listened to him being interviewed by Gary Eichten, I was polarized in my view that Rod Grams, while he is a good man, has become an indentured servant of the political establishment in Washington, D.C. And the interview with Gary brought that out clearly. When Gary asked him about the situation where both he would be elected and George Bush would be elected, what laws would he change on abortion? Rod Grams said, well, partial birth abortion is something that the people of Minnesota don't want, so I would work strongly to get that passed. And then Gary said, what else? Well, beyond that, we'd have to leave it up to the people of Minnesota. And when I saw that and listened to that, I realized that while Rod himself is personally pro-life, he's not fully committed to the personhood of the unborn child. In other words, it's okay if a few unborn children die. And in fact, he's even supported the funding of abortion education around the world with his votes.
So you think Rod Grams is too liberal on the abortion issue?
I think that Rod Grams has to toe the party line. The Republican Party is, in general, is not pro-life. They've supported all of the liberal agendas of the pro-abortion people in this country for the last 30 years.
Well, what happens when, though, that there is a restrictive law against abortion passed or any sort of restriction and the Supreme Court strikes it down? I mean, isn't that part of the problem?
The Supreme Court is part of the problem. The Supreme Court has reinvented the Constitution, finding rights that don't exist in it. And that is why we have Roe v. Wade and why it's been upheld by justices who, by the way, were appointed by Republicans. So the Republican Party at the top is not conservative, is not pro-life, and those Supreme Court justices in a constitutional republic would be impeached because they have failed to uphold the Constitution.
So if you were in the U.S. Senate and a Supreme Court justice appointee came before you, because you would have to vote to confirm or deny that person, what would you want to ask that person?
I would fundamentally say, do you support the Constitution in the sense that no person can be deprived of their right to life without due process of law? And then I would say, do you believe that the unborn child is a person? And if they answered yes to both of those questions, then I would say, you must support the ending of abortion in this country. We have to remember that in Minnesota, it's a felony to kill an unborn child. However, if the mother says, I want to kill that child, it's not a felony. It's called choice. And it's either a child or it's not. And that's the fundamental question. The fundamental question is not, does a woman have a choice? But the fundamental question is, what is she killing?
David Swan is a Constitution Party candidate for United States Senate. Either he or Derek Schramm will be on the ballot this fall with the other major party candidates in Minnesota. The Constitution Party is the fourth major party in the state because they passed one of the hurdles set up by state law during the last election. You can join our conversation with these two candidates. Give us a call if you're listening in the Twin Cities at 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. Anywhere else you can hear us, it's a toll-free number, 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. Derek Schramm, what do you think about Rod Grams? Is he too liberal on some of these issues for you, too?
Well, there was a vote taken in February or March where there was an amendment or a bill that would have basically made it somehow it would have affected those the pro-life protesters over at the abortion mills. And it wasn't going to protect them from the ability to file Chapter 13. Basically, pro-lifers were being singled out as, not allowed for the same protections to file bankruptcy as other people. And Rod Grams did not vote pro-life on that vote. And so I'm starting to see the pattern here. Then Rod Grams' other things is that he's been voting in favor of the UN and free trade and the International Monetary Fund. And I feel that there's going to be a loss of sovereignty through the Republican Party. We definitely see it in the Democrat Party. We're starting to see it in the Republican Party as well. It seems like the Democrats just control the Republicans. And I suppose the liberal media establishment seems to really beat down on the Republicans, and the Republicans just don't stand up to it.
What is abortion the major issue for the party? David Swan, let me ask you, is that the key issue that got the party started, or... Derek mentioned some of these sovereignty issues, the United Nations.
I think they're, Mike, that's a good question. I think they're all related back to the fundamental principles that are laid down in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. So people say, well, you're a one-party or a one-issue party. No, we're not. We are a constitutional party. Our goal is to have people who have taken an oath of office to support and defend the Constitution limit themselves to doing that which the Constitution says they're supposed to do. The Tenth Amendment says that if a power is not specifically enumerated and delegated to the federal government, that it belongs to the states or to the people. And what we have in Washington right now is we have people who've pledged to live by that, who are passing law after law after law, usurping authority that really belongs to the states or to the people. That's what we're really about, and abortion is one of those issues, because the Constitution says life must be protected at all costs.
Derek Schramm?
Howard Phillips, in his acceptance speech at the National Convention in St. Louis in September of last year, said that because the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution says that no person will be deprived of life without due process of law, that gives the president the authority to use federal marshals to shut down abortion mills. And that's exactly what he's going to do. And I support that. We are a right-to-life party. We are a Christian party. We do oppose abortion. We expect our candidates to.
Now, who's the candidate for president again?
His name is Howard Phillips. He ran in 1992, was on the ballot in 19 or 29 states. He was up to 39 states and on the ballot in 96. I voted for him. I learned about Howard Phillips on this radio station, in fact.
Hmm. And now, because the Constitution Party is a major party, will he be on the ballot in Minnesota this fall, too? Okay. Let's go to the phone lines. Jane is standing by from Minneapolis. Jane, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. my question is in regard to the abortion issue. I myself am a Christian, and I find it very interesting that a party of this nature would focus a lot of their attention on this specific issue, and that as a Christian, it would be preferable to me that it not be an issue of legislation at all, and that if as a Christian, you are going to make a difference. You make a difference in people's lives day to day rather than trying to make legislation out of it. And I'll go off the air.
Okay. What about that?
I'll go first.
Go ahead, Derek.
Well, once again, as Christians or whatever our beliefs are, our Constitution says no person will be deprived of the right to life without due process of law. Basically, when someone seeks out an abortion, they're hiring an assassin to kill their child. Howard Phillips wants to put a stop to that. Christian belief system basically says that has to be put a stop to. This is the personhood. You know, if you're a Christian, we have a commandment that says thou shalt not murder. There's plenty of biblical reasons not to abort children.
David Swan?
I think I understand, Jane, your point about living out our Christianity rather than just trying to change laws that may or may not affect people. But Let me share with you something that Mother Teresa said at the National Prayer Breakfast a couple of years ago before she died. She said, I feel that the greatest destroyer of peace today is abortion, because it is a war against the child, a direct killing of the innocent child. And then she said, so abortion just leads to more abortion. Any country that accepts abortion is not teaching its people to love, but to use any violence to get what they want. This is why the greatest destroyer of love and peace is abortion. And when she said that, she got a standing ovation from the National Prayer Breakfast. It's either a child or it's not. The Constitution protects all life, and therefore we don't have to pass any more laws. We simply have to enforce the Constitution.
That's David Swan. He's here today with Derek Schramm. They are the two people vying for the Constitution Party nomination this fall. They'll face off in the September primary, and one of them will be on the ballot in November, and Minnesotans will be able to choose whether they want to send them to the U.S. Senate. Let's go back to the phone lines. Clint is on the line. Clint, go ahead, please.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you just fine.
Okay, yeah. It just doesn't really sound like the Constitution Party. You really don't sound that different from the Republican Party. It sounds more like maybe you like the Republican Party, but maybe you're going to stand behind these issues because the Republican Party doesn't seem to be standing behind them. And it to me, I think we're in a new time. Time has changed things, and don't you think that possibly not just sticking with those old foundations, but possibly changing the Constitution and almost a reconstruction of thought? It does sound like you are all Christian. And the United States is a country that's open to many different people. It's a melting pot of ideas and thoughts. And just to have a focus on just one thought that's 3,000 years old that possibly may be a myth, I don't know.
Well, thanks for the call, Clint. A couple questions there. David Swan, again, what's the difference between the Constitution Party and the Republicans? It sounds like you take this anti-abortion position, and you're conservative, obviously. You have some problems with what the Supreme Court has done. Isn't that what the Republicans are saying, too?
A lot of people that I talk with say that they can't tell the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats anymore. And when you go back to 1980, the Republicans pledged that they would cease all funding for abortion-promoting industries and Planned Parenthood, and that they would seek to have in the Supreme Court and in the federal courts judges who are pro-life. The Supreme Court nominee, Sandra Day O'Connor, was an advocate for abortion. She'd been involved in Planned Parenthood for years. She was nominated and approved by a Republican president. In the last 10 years, we have had the federal spending go from $1 trillion to about $1.8, $1.9 trillion. 8 of those 10 years, we've either had a Republican in the White House or we've had a Republican-controlled Congress. How, when we talk about reducing the size of government, how can a Republican-controlled federal government almost double spending in a 10-year span if they are indeed committed to the principle of small government? The reality is, when they govern like Democrats. And that's not going to change, and that's why we are different, because we would limit federal government. In fact, we would roll back federal government to what it's constitutionally supposed to be. So we're drastically different than the Republicans.
And Derek Schramm, the other question the caller had was this stress you're putting on your Christianity. If you go to the U.S. Senate, you would have to represent Christians and Jews and all people.
I certainly invite the Orthodox Jews, Orthodox Muslims, and Orthodox Buddhists to support us. I also invite those women out there who really oppose pornography to support my candidacy or our Constitution Party candidates. I won't give a disclaimer here. I'm the only really candidate that's making a big issue of pornography. However, I want to plead the fifth on this, not the part where I can't and self-incriminate. I want to repeat the Fifth Amendment. No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. I think that we have to be fair. You know, every person has a right to mobilize others. This person who called, I forget where your name or where you're from, but you have the right to mobilize and vote for who you choose. And that's what we're doing. We're exercising our right in the political arena to exercise some Christian value system. We're not going to tyrannize anybody. We're not going to make you go to church.
Okay.
Can I add another comment to that?
Go ahead.
Clint's point is well taken because of the fact that we've been taught in the last several decades that we live in a pluralistic society. And so there is no right and wrong. There is no absolutes. Essentially, in history, there have really only been three political parties, regardless of what they've been called. You have one political party that says, man is sovereign. I can do whatever I want as long as it doesn't harm anybody else. Today, they're called libertarians. Okay. Then the second category of political parties would be the state is sovereign political parties. And that's what the Democrats are. The Republicans have morphed into that as they've gotten a taste of power in Washington. But their take is that whatever the federal government says is law, and that's rule. And you know, the laws of God be damned, basically. The third political party is the party that says man is not sovereign, the state is not sovereign, but God is sovereign. There is a creator. 90% of Americans believe that there is a supreme being. There is a creator, and when we break the laws that he has put in place in his creation, we do so at our own peril. Our government is based on that, and that's the party that we belong to.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Barry is standing by from Wayzata. Barry, go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you. I'm a little concerned about this believing so strongly in the Constitution that the women today have a right to vote, and yet that's a constitutional amendment that wasn't in the beginning of our country. There are changes as time goes on, and I don't think these gentlemen understand it, either one of them. They are not current. They're living in the past, and probably that's why they could not never be elected as a Republican.
I hope you're not accusing us of trying to remove that amendment to the Constitution.
No, I don't say that you are, but I don't think what you're doing is recognizing the fact that times change. Women were finally allowed to vote, but in the beginning of our nation, women were not allowed to vote.
And blacks weren't allowed to vote either.
Exactly.
We support freedom. I mean, we support civil rights.
You can't just keep referring to the Constitution as the deal.
The Constitution was amended to give the
okay, Barry.
Vote.
Let's give him a chance to talk here, Barry. Derek, do you want to finish your point?
Sure. Well, the Constitution was amended to give women the right to vote. The Constitution was amended to free the slaves. We support these things. We do want to amend the Constitution. It is in our platform to remove the income tax, the Federal Reserve Act. Those things are in our Constitution. That's one amendment we want to do away with. Another one we want to do away with is these Senate campaigns. We want the legislatures, the state legislatures, to elect the senators. We feel that that was in the Constitution way back as our founding fathers, too. Mm-hmm.
David Swan?
I think, Barry, I think you raise a good point that to some extent, there needs to be room to change the Constitution, but to throw it out, I don't think that you can support that premise simply because it's an old document. There are principles that are universal, and the Constitution embodies many of those. When there are adjustments that need to be made, I think you're right in pointing out that amendments need to be added to the Constitution. But to use that as a basis for saying that the whole thing should be jettisoned, I don't think is a valid jump.
Okay, we are going to take a short break now. We'll start with a test of the emergency alert system. This is a test of the emergency alert system.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by Metropolitan State University, dedicated to providing excellence in education for working adults. Minneapolis Open House, August 2nd. St. Paul, August 3rd.
Okay, now we're going to try our test of the emergency alert system. This is a test of the emergency alert system. And now we're going to check in with Stephen John in the news. Stephen?
Thank you, Mike. Good morning. It's 11:30. French officials are hoping the two black boxes will offer clues about what caused a Concorde to crash earlier this week. Investigators have finished decoding the flight data recorder. They'll compare it with the voice recorder and expect to have a complete analysis in the next few days. Marine Corps investigators have concluded that the pilot of an Osprey aircraft that crashed in the Arizona desert in April erred by hurrying his descent upon approaching the Marana airport. Details of the investigator's final report are to be released later today at a Pentagon news conference. The crash killed 19 Marines. George W. Bush's number two man is defending his record from his days as a congressman from Wyoming. Vice presidential candidate Dick Cheney tells CBS that he voted against the Equal Rights Amendment years ago because he feared it would require women to serve in the military. Ford is moving to make its SUVs more fuel efficient. The automaker has announced that it'll improve the average fuel economy of its sport utility vehicles by 25% over the next 5 years. That's a boost of about 5 miles per gallon. Cleanup is moving into high gear in Granite Falls after Tuesday's deadly tornado. Up to 350 homes were damaged and at least 41 were destroyed. One man was killed when he apparently sought shelter under his pickup truck. Granite Falls Mayor David Smigluski expects damage will exceed the $7 million caused by a flood that hit another part of town in 1997. Regional forecast, partly to mostly sunny, a slight chance of showers in the east today, highs from the upper 70s in the east to the middle 80s in the west. For the Twin Cities, around 85 today, 77 in International Falls and St. Cloud, 76 in the Twin Cities. That's news from Minnesota Public Radio.
Thanks, Stephen. We're talking on midday today to the two candidates for U.S. Senate from the Constitution Party. They will face off in the September primary. David Swan is the Constitution Party's endorsed candidate. We also have Derek Schramm. He is challenging Mr. Swan in the primary. One of these two men will be on the ballot this fall because the Constitution Party is a major party in the state of Minnesota. They passed that hurdle 2 years ago when their candidate for state auditor got more than 5% of the vote statewide. You can join our conversation if you'd like. The number to call in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Anywhere else you can hear us, call toll-free, 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. And let's go right back to the phones because we do have a fair number of people holding. Paul is calling from Minnetonka. Paul, welcome to Midday.
Hi, I have a question for both candidates. It's about the death penalty, and if I could, just a very short observation about the other parties. The Democratic Party seems to have a position that on abortion they're pro-choice, and on the death penalty they're, of course, against the death penalty. The Republicans have the reverse. Question for both candidates is, what is the Constitution Party position on this, and how does it relate to the issue of abortion and life, pro-life or pro-choice? That's it.
Thanks for the call. Derek Schramm, you want to
take
that
one? Sure, I'll address that. Well, personally, I'm not opposed to the death penalty. The Constitution allows for the death penalty for treason, and I have no plans to overturn that. I don't plan to vote in favor of legislation that would put a moratorium on the states to prohibit the death penalty. This is a states' rights issue, and basically, I like your observation that the Democrats are pro-choice or pro-abortion when it comes to the right to life issue. I say pro-abortion because they want tax-funded abortion. And then they're pro-life when it comes to the death penalty. I would definitely love to trade that that around. If I knew that the right to life, an amendment, and the exercise of right to life law would come into play, then I would definitely be in favor of opposing the death penalty. The Constitution Party's platform doesn't have plans to put a moratorium on the death penalty.
Okay. David Swan, do you want to respond to that one?
Yes, thank you. Paul, your question about the death penalty and its relationship to the pro-life position, I think that we have to remember that the shedding of innocent blood is one of the foundational ideas of civil government. Prevent the shedding of innocent blood, and the emphasis there is innocent. There should be just penalties for those who commit serious crimes. And while taking a life is a very serious matter, it needs to be done with great care and with great certainty that that kind of capital offense has been committed. I don't think that it's unconstitutional to do so, and I don't think it's inconsistent with the pro-life position.
Can we ask quickly about a few other items? There's been a lot of talk about this proposed missile shield, and they've done some testing, and it hasn't tested out very well, and the president is going to decide whether to go ahead with that project or not. David Swan, if you had to vote on funding that, how would you vote for that?
Well, I would vote to provide us with the strongest defense possible. And unlike Mr. Clinton, who has backpedaled on this as long as he could until it became politically astute to support it, I would go full forward with it. I believe that is the proper role of a senator, though, because that's an issue of national defense.
Even though some argue that going ahead with the project would actually lead to an arms race or a renewed arms race, you would still want to go ahead with it?
Going ahead with what Ronald Reagan went ahead with led to the capitulation and the fall of the Soviet Union. And I believe that when you negotiate from a position of strength, people who are moral cowards, communists, will back down. When you negotiate from a position of let's be together on this, they have no incentive to withdraw their threat of force at all.
Derek, where are you on that?
Well, I favor a nuclear umbrella. I have since my high school days. I've been advocating that. Well, you have to look at, I think Ralph Nader has made the point that then those who would want to terrorize the U.S. with a nuclear bomb would have to do so in a suitcase. Well, my goodness, let's if they're going to come in here with a nuclear bomb, let's at least have a nuclear umbrella. Then the customs and other national security can try to prevent the suitcase bomb from coming in.
Okay, what about education? The candidates from the other major parties have been talking quite a bit about education. The Democrats debated last night on TV and talked about a greater role for the federal government in education. How do you feel about that?
Well, what I'm seeing with education is that the central government or the federal government is basically taking over local school boards. I have a colleague who's a school board member, and he didn't know anything about my views, and he said that there's this Maple River Coalition coming up who oppose the profiles, and they keep coming to all our meetings. And I held back, but I just wanted to say, they're showing up. Isn't it supposed to be that the people who show up are the ones who govern? They keep showing up, and they're not getting listened to. We're seeing in our education system that the federal government is basically taking it over. We haven't seen that in our lifetime. We've had public education since, you know, before 1850. I'm opposed to federal government in education, the Federal Department of Education, and I would like to abolish the property tax rebate or however the National Education Association gets free from taxes in Washington.
David Swan, what do you feel about the federal government and education?
Again, we have to point at the Constitution, which was established to preserve our liberty and specifically prohibits the federal government from legislating anything that has to do with what goes on in a school. All of the funding that the federal government, the ESEA, should be never passed again. It was a mistake to start funding that back in the 1960s. The Department of Education was a political payoff to the NEA by Jimmy Carter. That should be abolished. There is no constitutional role for the federal government to dictate what goes on in the classrooms in this country. And so when we return control of the classrooms and of what is taught to the parents, then the moral climate in this country will take a big jump up, because parents will again have to be faced with the reality of, my goodness, what do I teach my son and my daughter about what's right and wrong? All education is fundamentally religious at its core. If we don't want the government to tell us what they should be teaching in Sunday school, we don't want the government telling us what they should be teaching in Monday school either.
And could I add something?
Please.
I just wanted to say that, you know, if in the unlikely event that I'm elected senator, I want to say that I will try to make amendments that will allow for the scientific creation to be promoted in the schools. I will allow for abstinence sex education. I wait until marriage. But when it comes down to the final act or bill, I'm probably going to oppose that because it's going to have so many other amendments that are just unconstitutional.
Derek Schramm is one of the candidates seeking the Constitution Party's nomination for U.S. Senate. David Swan is the other. They're both with us in the studios today. and we're taking your calls. Dan is on the line from Columbia Heights. Dan, welcome to Midday.
Hi. I won't address the absurd hypocrisy of both candidates' position on the death penalty. What I would like to address is the constitutional separation of church and state. There's a lot of discussion about the values and the Christian values of the founding fathers. If you do your research, you'll find that the majority of the founding fathers, including Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the majority of the Constitution, were not Christian. They were deists. They were extreme rationalists. They weren't Christian. With that constitutional ban of, you know, the constitutional separation of church and state, it doesn't seem to me that one could call themselves a Constitution Party and advocate a Christian government. This is the same thing that we see in a lot of the Arab world countries, such as Iran and Afghanistan, who have fundamentalist Islamic governments. Basically, what this party is advocating is the same thing.
No, it's not.
How is it different?
Once again, let me plead the fifth. No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. What this party is advocating is limiting government. It's there to limit government. That's what the Constitution is for. To return, do you really think that we want to have women have to wear their whole bodies covered up? I really don't think so. That's not where we're trying to go. We're trying to limit government. We just think that government doesn't have a big role in families, and families will basically take care of themselves without the all the left-wing programs that the government is providing for. This is how Howard Phillips left the Republican Party during the Nixon administration. He basically was trying to pull out left-wing programs being funded by the government, and Nixon threw him back in. He left the Republican Party, and then by 1992 was running on his own.
Well, let's ask David Swan about this. Would the if the Constitution Party ran everything, would this be like Iraq or Iran? Would this be a, church state?
That's quite a leap, Dan, and I'm sorry to see that you're making that one. You started out pretty well, but that's a leap of logic that I don't think you can support when you look at read the Declaration of Independence and understand that there is the acknowledgement there that there is a supreme being. There is not the acknowledgement that you or Mike or Derek or anyone else has to follow my particular religion. But there is an acknowledgement that there is a supreme being, that the system that we have here is created, that there is a design, that there's an order, that there are moral absolutes. And by the way, the common law that we have today is based on those absolutes. And many of the founders of the country, the so-called deists that you described, supported the moral ideals of the Christian faith. And those were incorporated into the Constitution, not because they were necessarily Christian, but because they realized that they were universal principles. And I have to believe that even if this country was run by people who were followers of Christ, that anyone who's willing to die on a cross would be a little bit more compassionate than the ruling Hezbollah in some of these Muslim countries.
They might take a different position on capital punishment, too, though, mightn't they?
Well, that is a sticky one, and I admit that there are good people who've come down on both sides of that question, and it is a serious one. I guess it's hard for me to say that it's a black-and-white answer. Things need to be considered on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines. Tim is calling in from Wisconsin. Tim, welcome to Midday.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
I have a question to both of the speakers there regarding the 16th Amendment and the federalized income tax, because I know for a fact that the 16th Amendment was not ratified by Congress because it only had 9 votes and it needed 23 to pass, and yet it's claiming that it passed. I'd like to know what's the Constitutional Party's stance on that?
David Swan, why don't you take that one?
Well, yeah, you've been doing some reading, it sounds like, Tim. That's an interesting. I've heard the same thing. In 1916, the income tax was instituted. I think a little historical background is important here. Number one, we did not institute an income tax because the federal government needed revenue. Up until that time, the federal government was balanced except for a few years around the Civil War. So the income tax did not have as its primary purpose to fund the government. The income tax was created for the purpose of socially engineering the country to a particular ideology. And regardless of whether it got 9 votes or 23 votes, it has been operating as the law of the land since 1916. I believe that another place in the Constitution which points out that the federal government is not supposed to tax the citizens directly makes it plain that the founders believed that there should be no income tax, and indeed we lived that way for a long time. There should be no capital gains tax, there should be no estate tax, there should be no corporate taxes, and so on. And there should be no Social Security or FICA taxes, and the federal government should be operating on a lot slimmer margin than it does now.
So if you were elected, you would work to repeal the income tax and repeal these other taxes, repeal Social Security?
Mm-hmm. And if you look at balancing the side of the equation by reducing federal spending by approximately 70%, if you limit the federal government to its constitutional duties...
Which are what?
National defense, foreign policy, okay, and some trade issues.
Okay.
If you limit the federal government to its constitutional responsibilities, then you could cut spending by 70% and you could return hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars back into taxpayers' pockets. The liberty, the freedom of our people would increase greatly. They would have the money, and the states could then enact whatever laws they wanted to. And that was the original intent, was not that we have a strong central government, but that the people keep their money and those decisions be made at the state and local level.
Derek Schramm?
Sure. Tim, I have come across that same information. It was through a WorldNet Daily website news, and I even posted that information on the cpmn.org website. That's the Constitution Party Minnesota website. And I have looked into that, and people say that, you know, the Supreme Court ruled that it was legal to have an income tax. I think what you bring up is a very important point that needs more investigation. Also, concerning the income tax, is that the income tax has not been adjusted for inflation since the 1940s. Ralph Reed, in his book Politically Incorrect, that if they would have adjusted that, that would be a $7,000 standard deduction. Now, we oppose income taxes because just imagine what if we did that, we'd have 100,000 IRS workers out there to go into the market that needs skilled mathematicians and accountants. Once again, let's look into the legality of the income tax, because it appears that it was not legally ratified, and basically work to abolish it.
We're talking to Derek Schramm and David Swan. They are two candidates seeking the nomination of the Constitution Party for U.S. Senate. The Constitution Party is Minnesota's fourth major party. One of these people will be on the ballot in November, and you will get the chance to vote for one of them if you choose. We are continuing our Meet the Candidate series, and let's go back to the phones. Paul is calling from St. Paul.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I wish to take issue with two things, if I may.
Go ahead.
Number one is your Constitution is not based on Christian principles. They are based on good old-fashioned Jewish principles. Please look in the Old Testament. And the founders, Jefferson especially, gave credence to this. And number two, the income tax issue. Hooray for bringing that up. Please promote what is going on. We are being stifled by this government and its income tax issue. Those two issues. Thank you. I'll take your comments off the air.
Thank you, Paul. Jewish principles, not Christian principles.
I would have to agree. The carpenter who died on the cross was a Jew, and Judeo-Christian principles would be a more accurate way of stating those things. And Paul, I appreciate your correction, and I appreciate your encouragement on the tax issue. We need to get rid of that system as fast as we can.
Let's go back to the phones. Andrew is calling from Minneapolis. Andrew?
Good day. Thank you for taking my call. I'd also like to take the opportunity to clear up a popular American misconception, which is that Thomas Jefferson was influential during the writing of the Constitution. Thomas Jefferson was in Europe during the summer of 1787 and did not attend the Constitutional Convention. And I'm surprised that two members of a party entitled the Constitution Party had neither the knowledge nor the brevity to clear up that misconception. I'll take your response off the air. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, actually, it was a caller who brought that up that said that he wrote the Constitution. I started to question that myself, but I wanted to concentrate on the issues. I thought Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence. That's
right.
That's what I remember it as. I'm sorry if I didn't impress you with brevity or anything there. I want to focus on the issues. So that's how I respond to your question.
If you were in the Senate, would you cut funding for the United Nations and foreign aid? Is that not something that the U.S. government should be doing?
Definitely. I would cut funding for the United Nations, International Monetary Fund, all those programs. We need to balance our budget, and we need to basically get down our $5.5 trillion deficit. Our nation is in debt. So many citizens are in debt with credit cards. There's so much debt in the United States. You know, I hear all these calls for basically ending foreign debt for all nations, and I just say, oh boy, we could really use an end to our debt ourselves.
David Swan, are you pretty much on the same page then?
I think the principle behind that, yes, Mike, I am. The principle behind that is that senators' job is to protect and defend the Constitution. One of those things that's at stake in the Constitution is our national sovereignty. When we send troops to the United Nations and they are not under the command of our armed forces, but literally under the command of another sovereign body, that's not right. And the United Nations came into existence in order to create an environment where the sovereignty of every nation that participates would be subjugated to the sovereignty of the United Nations, and that's why it's fundamentally wrong, and that's why we need to get out of it.
Okay, back to the phones. Jack is calling from Hastings. Jack, go ahead, please.
Two questions, or two comments, actually. One, as you can tell by all the calls you got, the gentleman bringing up their Christian values and their Christian comments disturbs people. And if I'm not mistaken, our founding fathers made provisions for separation of church and state in our government. The other thing being that they made comment about Mr. Graham saying that on his views he would have to wait and see what the people of Minnesota said. I would like to remind the people that when we put our government officials in place, they are sometimes forgetting that they represent all of us without exception. All the people in Minnesota.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Jack. We have about a minute to go. David Swan, do you want to respond?
That was my comment, so I'll respond to that, Jack. Thank you. The wait and see is wrong because it denies the constitutional right to life of the unborn child and says that we'll just stick our finger in the wind and see what people are saying. That's why that comment was wrong. Separation of church and state was misinterpreted based on a document that wasn't even in the Constitution. It was just a letter that Jefferson wrote, and the justices found this letter, and suddenly it became constitutional law. The separation of powers was designed to keep the state from becoming a church, and I would agree with that, but it's not designed to keep the influence of the church out of our government.
And Derek Schramm, quick comment?
Yeah, my comment is that yeah, I don't want to make you go to church. I don't want to choose your church for you. That the First Amendment says that the government is not going to establish a church. So, you know, once again, churchy people can try to get elected.
Okay, well, I want to thank both of you for coming in today. It's been an interesting hour, and it went too quickly. Derek Schramm is a candidate for the U.S. Senate, seeking the Constitution Party nomination. David Swan, the Constitution Party's endorsed candidate for Senate. You two will face off against each other in the September primary, and then the winner will be on the ballot in November. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you, Mike.
The nation's first all-freshwater aquarium is opening this weekend in Duluth, but the track record of other aquariums around the state isn't good. I'm Perry Finelli. We'll have that story, and meteorologist Mark Seely joins us, plus the rest of the news tomorrow on Morning Edition from 4 to 9 here on Minnesota Public Radio, KNW FM 91.1 in the Twin Cities.
And now here's Garrison Keillor and the Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 27th of July. 2000. It was on this day in 1953 in Panmunjom, the Korean War was brought to a close after 2 years of negotiations, helped along by a couple of things, the election of Dwight Eisenhower as President of the United States, and also the death of Joseph Stalin. It's the birthday of novelist Bharati Mukherjee, born in Calcutta, 1940, Indian-born but an American writer who attended college in both countries, author of The Tiger's Daughter, the novel Wife, many collections of short stories. Bharati Mukherjee, who wrote, "I feel there are people born to be Americans. By American, I mean an intensity of spirit and a quality of desire. I feel American in a very fundamental way, whether Americans see me that way or not." It was on this day in 1921 at the University of Toronto, physiologist Frederick Banting and his assistant Charles Best isolated the hormone insulin, which was later used to control diabetes. It's the birthday of Joseph Mitchell in Iona, North Carolina, 1908, who came to New York City and wrote for many years for The New Yorker magazine. Wrote about the Fulton Fish Market and the clamors of Long Island, the oystermen of Staten Island, about gin mill owners and a flea circus operator, and about Joe Gould, Professor Seagull, who claimed to have translated the poetry of Longfellow into the language of seagulls. Joseph Mitchell, who wrote about McSorley's Saloon in New York, "It is a drowsy place. The bartenders never make a needless move. The customers nurse their mugs of ale, and the three clocks on the walls have not been in agreement for many years. The backbone of the clientele is a rapidly thinning group of crusty old men, predominantly Irish, who have been drinking there since they were youths and now have a proprietary feeling about the place." It's the birthday of the poet and essayist Hilaire Belloc, born in La Celle-Saint-Cloud, France, in 1870. His father was a French lawyer. His mother was English. He became a British subject in 1902. He wrote many essays, political essays, in his time, but is remembered today for his nonsensical verse for children, such as, "Matilda told such dreadful lies, it made one gasp and stretch one's eyes. Her aunt, who from her earliest youth had kept a strict regard for truth, attempted to believe Matilda. The effort very nearly killed her." And it's the birthday of the novelist and playwright Alexandre Dumas the Younger, born in Paris, 1824, the son of the man who wrote The Three Musketeers. The younger Alexandre Dumas wrote a famous play, Camille, which the opera La Traviata by Giuseppe Verdi was based on. Here's a poem by Hilaire Belloc on his birthday. Franklin Hyde, who caroused in the dirt and was corrected by his uncle. His uncle came on Franklin Hyde carousing in the dirt. He shook him hard from side to side and hit him till it hurt, exclaiming with a final thud, "Take that, abandoned boy, for playing with disgusting mud as though it were a toy." Moral. From Franklin Hyde's adventure learn to pass your leisure time in cleanly merriment and turn from mud and ooze and slime and every form of nastiness. But on the other hand, children in ordinary dress may always play with sand. Hilaire Belloc's poem about Franklin Hyde, from the Penguin Book of Nonsense Verse, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, July 27th, made possible by 21NorthMain.com, where book lovers find more than 10 million used, rare, and antiquarian books on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Production assistance from Tom Kubasik. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Regional broadcasts of the Writer's Almanac are supported by Marquette Banks, your community bank, offering a broad range of financial services for your business and personal needs.
It's 12 o'clock now. Coming up after the news, a National Press Club speech from Jack Nasser, the CEO of Ford Motor Company.